So we're holding on Tzadik Zayin, Amr Aleph, fourth line. Now the Gemara starts off, Shitzi Atzbi Simen. This is a simen for the names of the Amoraim and the statements that we're going to be making. Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak is the Shin and the Yud, or the Shin is the, for Shmuel, the Yud is for Yeshanos. And later on, we have Rav Yitzchak, and we have Tzvasim later down on the Amud. It's actually a little bit uncertain exactly what the Simon stands for. Basically, like the Simonim go, it stands for some keywords or some names that are going to feature in the discussion. I've often mentioned things from a sefer called Bamnatseach LeDavid by Rav David Powder, one of the big Sfardish Rabbanim of a couple hundred years ago, where he tries to find in each one of them some deeper meaning behind it. He explains that the word Shitzi means in Aramaic thorns, and Atzbi is Moloshin Atzabim, means idols. So he explains that it's talking about at the bottom of the Amud, we're going to talk about danger from Goyim versus from Listim, from robbers, where those robbers can be Jews. So therefore, the thorns represents the Jews who are not doing the right thing. They're robbers, as opposed to the Atzbi represents the Goyim. He says that's the deeper meaning behind this simon. Anyway, it's appropriate, actually. It's Motzei Shabbos, Parshas Chayesara, when you have the famous thing about thorns, Rivka being like the rose among thorns that was plucked out of there. So maybe there's some connection with that also. Anyway, so Gemara says, okay, we left off like this. We're discussing the question of, in the Mishnah we had Rabbi Yehuda saying that
Alexander.
Yeah.
I don't hear you very well. It sounds very muffled and muted.
I'm not sure why that should be. I have my volume on maximum. I don't know. I'm not sure what to tell you. I'll try to speak a little louder, I guess. Okay, anyway, we said in the Mishnah that you can, if you find tefillin out in the field, then you can wear them and bring them in on Shabbos. But we said in the Mishnah that only applies if they're old, not if they're new. We brought a braisa where Rabbi Yehuda is saying that. Rabbi Yehuda distinguishes between new tefillin and old tefillin. Now, why should there be a difference? So we started discussing that maybe that is because that would be, according to that opinion, the problem is these might not actually be tefillin at all. These might actually be kameis, which are made in the shape of tefillin. And therefore, so the point is, Tosfos explains at the bottom of the previous Amud that neither of them right now have knots in them, but old ones you can recognize, you can see from the shape of the ritzuris that there once were knots on them, the dalad knot and the yud knot, as we're going to discuss soon. So therefore, you know that they're tefillin, as opposed to new ones, you can't recognize that yet, so they might actually be kameis. So now the Gemara continues, and so Rava had said that actually that's the machlokas tanoim itself, Rav Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, would we say that a person might go to the trouble of making a kameya looking like tefillin, in which case these might actually be kameis, and therefore you don't have a heter to wear them and bring them in on Shabbos, or would we say that nobody's going to bother doing that, and therefore if you find something shaped like tefillin, then most likely it is tefillin. So now the Gemara continues, v'hashta d'toni avur d'shmur bar Rav Yitzchak. Now that we have a braisa that the father of Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak taught, now Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak's father obviously is going to be Rav Yitzchak. I guess the Gemara calls him avur d'shmur bar Rav Yitzchak because the son was better known than the father. So if we just said Rav Yitzchak, we wouldn't know who it's talking about. When we say Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak's father, then it's more clear which Rav Yitzchak we're talking about. Anyway, he taught a braisa. Elu hein yeshonis, the definition of old tefillin for this purpose, is kol sheyesh behen ritzuris umkushoris, is old ones are, there are ritzuris in them, and the ritzuris are actually tied with the proper knots of tefillin, the dalad knot and the yud knot. Whereas chadoshes means yesh behen ritzuris v'loy mukushoris, new tefillin, the definition would be that there are ritzuris in them, but they're not tied. So now we understand from this braisa that it has nothing to do with like a kameya or not. Now we understand, now we can say, evidently, everybody agrees that nobody's going to bother making a kameya looking like tefillin. The question is, the problem is that if they don't have the knots in them, then how are you supposed to wear them on Shabbos? Because you can't tie knots on Shabbos. This that we're saying, that the Chachamim are giving us ways in order to be able to carry in these tefillin, ultimately you can't do it in a way that's going to be mechal Shabbos d'oraisa. You can only do where, for example, like this, wearing it is not the normal thing to do on Shabbos, but we're allowing it for this purpose. But not when you're doing a malacha d'oraisa, like tying. So that would be the problem. Nothing to do with kameis versus tefillin, but having to do with that you can't tie them. The Ritva adds, in other words, that the svara would be that the svara would be, given that during week, that on weekdays, the only way you wear tefillin is with the knots on them, then therefore, in other words, on Shabbos, we can't allow you to wear it without the knots. We can't allow you, let's say, to just wrap it tightly around your head, because that would be different than you do on weekdays. So it would amount to carrying them rather than wearing. So the question is, why don't we find, we can't make an actual knot in them, why don't we make a bow tie in them, which is not considered a real knot? So Rav Chista says, since we don't have that as an option, then evidently that means that wouldn't work with tefillin. You need an actual kesher shokayama. You need an actual permanent knot, not just a bow tie. So therefore, nothing doing. A bow tie wouldn't work anyway. We're back to the point, in other words, that if you're wearing them not in the normal way that you would wear them on weekdays, that would be carrying them on Shabbos. The Gemara is going to explain in a second that actually the Yehuda and the Chachamim disagree in general anyway about bow ties, whether you're allowed to make them on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda holds not, the Chachamim hold yeah. So Tosfos says either Rav Chista would prefer to have the Mishnah go. Now, we were talking about Rabbi Yehuda. It's the same Rabbi Yehuda who's distinguishing between the new and the old ones. Nevertheless, Rav Chista would prefer to make that part of the Mishnah about the distinction between new and old work, not only according to the Yehuda, but even according to the Chachamim. Or Tosfos says the other possibility is that Rav Chista takes the view that even Rav Yehuda, who doesn't allow bow ties, he would allow them where you're only doing, it's a bow tie, it's not a real knot, but it's not even something that you're planning to keep permanently. You're just doing it for the moment, and then you're going to take it out after Shabbos and make a real knot like tefillin should have. So therefore, Rav Chista figured that nevertheless, that we're not allowing that shows that that doesn't help as far as tefillin. You can't wear tefillin with a bow tie in them. Abaya Omar, Abaya says, no, Rav Yehuda l'taymei. Rabbi Yehuda is going according to his shita, da'amra nivak shita mal yasihi. He says that a bow tie is a real knot, meaning, in other words, so we're back to that, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can't make a bow tie in it because that would be the equivalent of making a real knot. And therefore, so the mayor is allowing it because he disagrees and says a bow tie is not a knot. Or if Tosfos says, okay, even a mayor might say that a strong bow tie is considered a knot, but not a weak one, which you might do over here. So Rabbi Yehuda, okay, would hold that a bow tie is possible. That is why Rabbi Yehuda says new ones, meaning as we just established from Rabbi Yitzchak's Breisa, from Avur de Shmuel, but Rabbi Yitzchak's Breisa, that if they don't have knots in them, then you can't wear them on Shabbos. That's why, because Rabbi Yehuda says you can't make a bow tie, because Rabbi Yehuda holds that a bow tie you're not allowed to make on Shabbos either.
At this point, this kameh business is off.
So it seems that we're saying the kameh business is off. However, now that you mention it, it is an interesting point. Now you have Rishonim who learn that means, yeah, we're done with the idea of kameh. We're strictly dealing with the question, do they have the knots in them or not? Can he make a knot? Can you make a bow tie or whatever? However, the Rif and the Rosh and the Rambam all learn that we still accept the point about that they might be kameis, meaning that we still accept Rava's point. So how do they understand the Gemara over here? So one way is to understand that we are mentioning the matter of knots, but still that's not the primary thing. The primary thing is if they don't have the knots in them, they might after all be kameis. If it weren't for that, maybe the Chachamim, if there wasn't a concern about it being a kameah, maybe the Chachamim would allow you, given the halacha is not like a Yehuda, a bow tie is not a real knot, maybe they would allow you to make a temporary bow tie and take them in that way. But
if you find a knot, you don't have to worry about
it. So if you find that it has the knot, then we're saying that once it has the dalad knot and the yud knot, there's no reason to be concerned that it's kameya. Because to that extent, they might make a kameya in the shape of tefillin. They're not going to put the dalad knot and the yud knot on it like we have on tefillin. Yeah.
Kamehameha has no Kedusha.
A Kamehameha doesn't have Kedusha, right. At least, well, even if it has some Kedusha, because maybe it has Pesukim in it, it doesn't have the degree of Kedusha that the Chachamim are going to allow you to do something which is, at least on a Derabbanan level, Chilul Shabbos, in order to bring it in. What they would require in that case, at most, what you would have to do is wait there till after Shabbos, like when I talk about the bottom of the Yomboot, and then bring them all in after Shabbos, but not to actually wear them.
Even if
it's Mukta. Is it Mukta? No, yeah. I mean, the Kamehas aren't necessarily Mukta, but... Yeah, if they were used three times and known to be.
According to people, hold it to that Shabbos you don't wear tefillin and it's only a tachshu you're allowed to wear. So
that's the point.
You should be allowed to put on.
Nevertheless, though, we're still saying that it's not the usual way because you still, even if you say Shabbos lavs man tefillin, that it's not normal to wear tefillin on Shabbos at all. So therefore, that's what we're saying. So the Chachamim are allowing us to bend that rule in order to save the tefillin from bizoyin, but not when they're not definitely tefillin. Yeah. By the way, Tosfos mentions an interesting point over here that there are Rishonim, he brings from Rabbeinu Eliyahu, who says that the knot of the tefillin has to actually be remade every day in order to be Mekayim. But based on this, it seems not. The Gemara is saying over here that it needs to be a Kesher Shel Kayama, that it needs to be a permanent knot, which is how we do it. We tie them once, or the sofer ties them for us, and generally we never retie them again. We never untie them and retie them. What we do have is the knot that we talked about the other day, the knot that the Alter Rebbe invented that has a loop in it, which we make larger and smaller. That way, at least in a certain sense, we're mekayim ukshavtem lo'isa yodecha by closing up that loop. Yeah. Okay. Although with that said, it's not so simple because actually it's broad. I think there were some of the Rebbeim who did not make up like this. When we take off our tefillin, we're in the habit of loosening, of opening up that loop a little bit. But some of the Rebbeim did not do that, actually. They would just, they held that you're Mekayim the mitzvah just by tightening the tefillin onto your arm without actually closing that loop, without actually making that loop tighter every day. And therefore, they just left it tight all the time.
It has to be tight. It has to be the right spot.
Where it has to be in the right spot. That's also true, right?
Not easier. Yeah, but...
Right. Okay. Fine. So the Gemara says, "Taima daaniva kshira mal yasidi." Okay. So what are you telling me? According to Rabbi Yehuda, according to Abaya's understanding of what's going on over here, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if you find these tefillin without knots, then you can't do anything with them on Shabbos because you can't make bow ties. So the implication seems to be, why not? Because the aniva kshira mali sehi, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, a bow tie is a real knot, which you're not allowed to make on Shabbos. Holav hochi oniv lahu. Does that imply, though, that if it weren't for that problem, if Rabbi Yehuda were to hold like the Chachamim, that you're allowed to make bow ties on Shabbos, you'd be allowed to make a bow tie in these, and then it would be considered you have a kosher knot for tefillin? What do you mean? Well, Amar of Yehuda Bereder of Shmo Bashilas Mishmei Derab, Kesher Shol Tefillin, Alach Lo Mesh Misinayhu, the knot of the tefillin, the type of knot that we make on the Shol Yad and the Shol Rosh, that it has to be like a Dalid, and also Rashi adds also the fact that you have that a Shin on the outside of the Shol Rosh, and that you have the Yud by the Shol Yad, all of that is Alach Lo Mesh Misinay. And Rav Nachman says that when you make those knots, you have to make sure that the nice side of it is to the outside. So Rashi explains we're talking about the shin. In other words, when we say shin shel tefillin alach l'mosh m'sinai, you think about it, the shorosh is made out of four compartments. You could understand it to mean that the shin should be on the side of one of those compartments where it touches the next one. No, it has to be labar, it has to be outs on the outside of the respective compartments in order that's visible from the outside. Tosfos says actually we're referring to the knots, that when you make the dalad knot, you have to have that the side of it that faces outward is the side that's shaped like a dalad. On the Shol Rosh, on the back of the Shol Rosh. In other words, when you look at the knot, if you look at the back of the person's head, you should see the dalad shape. You actually have, it's well, as we know, there are two different major minhagim of the knot on the Shol Rosh. You have our minhag, and our minhag is that the knot actually looks like a dalad. And then you have the parts of the velt, many Ashkenazic kahilas have the minhag that actually the knot is shaped like a square. It's actually like two dalads like this. It's like two dalads facing each other. But the point is, you look from the outside of the knot, you see the dalad shapes, as opposed to, in other words, you shouldn't have the opposite side of the knot facing out. And the same thing with shoryad, the yud should be visible. It shouldn't be that it looks like a backwards yud. It should be like looks, the side of it that's facing out is the side that looks like a yud.
For some reason, the old film, I see some people having that, you know, the part that you put on the end of it, you see it up, some you see it down.
I don't know. I mean, it's supposed to look like a yud. So the end of it, I guess, can be tilted up a little bit, but basically it should be going in through the knot. Anyway, the point is that we see that the actual shape of the knot, that the actual type of knots you have to have is halacha mishmisinai. So what's the hava amina that you can make a bow tie in the first place? That we would say, if you could make a bow tie, then you would be allowed to take these tefillin in on Shabbos. The answer is exactly that. Okay, what you do is you make a knot of the shape that's supposed to be, but instead of an actual knot that would be permanent, instead you make a bow tie in that shape. Let's say you have, with any kind of knot, it's possible to have, you put in the ends of the string, or in this case, the ends of the ritzua in a certain way where if you pull on one of them, you could pull the whole thing loose.
We learned about this maybe 2 months ago, a month and a half ago.
I don't think we...
You mentioned about the garbage, Shabbos, take garbage.
Oh, okay.
So you spoke about it.
Yeah, okay. So we talked about it in Masechta Shabbos, actually. We talked about as far as bow ties, right. But, right, there's a difference also whether you're using two ends or whether you're using one end, right. But in general, any kind of knot that you make, it's possible to make the same kind of knot, make it that you put the strap in, you put the ritzua in one extra time in one place, let's say, in order that now you have someplace, an actual loop in it, where if you pulled it, the whole thing would come out. So conceivably, you could do the same thing with these tefillin. You make a temporary knot like that. You make a knot like that. It still has the shape of the dalet or the yud, but it's a bow tie in the sense that you could pull on it and the whole thing would come out. And therefore, you would be able to do that on Shabbos, except for the fact that according to Rabbi Yehuda, such a thing would be considered an actual knot anyway, and you can't do that on Shabbos.
So we're trying to make it look like tefillin, and not even though he's wearing it as
so what we're saying is,
tachshit,
well, because again, that's what we're saying. Whether we said Shabbos is man tefillin or Shabbos loves man tefillin, either way, the way that you're wearing it on Shabbos has to be similar to the way you wear it on weekdays. If we say Shabbos is man tefillin and you're actually going to be yotze to the mitzvah, then for sure you have to have the knots on it. But even if not, you have to have the same kind of, you have to have knots on it that would make it kosher on weekdays, even if we say Shabbos lavs man tefillin. So what the Gemara is saying now is fine. What you do is you find these things, again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're saying that new ones, it wouldn't work. And the reason is because there's no way of making knots, even temporary knots in them, that would make it kosher to wear. If it weren't for that problem, then aniva, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is considered kshira. You could conceivably do that. You make a dalet-shaped knot, except instead of making it in the regular way such that it's a permanent knot, you make it in a way that it could be pulled loose, and then it would still be valid as far as the halacha that you need a dalet shaped knot, but it wouldn't be breaking Shabbos on a daraisa level because you haven't made a permanent knot. The halacha is not like a Yehuda, so you're allowed to make bow ties, right? Okay. So that's the thing. So that's the thing, though. The Rif and the Rambam and the Rosh all talk about that nevertheless, there is this difference between Chadoshim and Yeshonim, and that requires us to say that you still do have to consider the Kameya problem, the problem that Rava had brought up before, that sometimes that a person might make a Kameya in the shape of Tefillin, and therefore if they're Chadoshim, then you can't be sure that it's not a Kameya. Okay, and again, you know, you have Rav Chista's and you have Abaya's ways of understanding the Braisa, fine, but Rava has a different way of understanding it. And when we have Abaya and Rava, the halacha is like Rava,
which means
therefore, so we do have, so there is, that. So we do have that the different, so we do have the different, we do accept Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchok's father's Braisa, that the difference between Yeshonis and Kadoshis is whether they have the knots in them or not. But the problem is not so much that you can't make knots. The problem is if they don't have the knots in them, they might actually be Kameis. Okay. Talking about tefillin, talking about dinim of tefillin, the Gemara mentions a side thing. Amar of Chista Amar Rab, halakeach tefillin mimisha enim mumcha. If a person buys tefillin from somebody who is not known to be an expert. Now, Tosfos points out, l'chatchila, you're supposed to buy from an expert in the first place. This way, like this thing, we're going to talk about how many you have to open up and check. Don't do that, l'chatchila. Don't buy them from somebody off the street and then say, okay, I'll check them, because you might not. You might not buy it. It's a little bit of a bizoyan to the tefillin to have to open up to have to take out the stitches and open them up to check them in the first place. And you might not even bother doing it. So better you should buy them from a mumcha. But let's say b'dieved you didn't. Then you have to check at least two. Let's say you bought a whole bunch of them. You bought a whole bundle of tefillin from him, not just one pair. So in order to check whether he's a mumcha, you have to do bodik shtayim shal yad ba'achas shal rosh. You have to check two shal yads and one shal rosh of the whole set. Or two shoroshes and one shoyad. If all three of them check out and the writing is good and the batim are good and so forth, then you know the guy is a mumcha, and now in the future you can buy from him and you don't need to check them ahead of time.
Regardless of where you bought it from?
What?
Regardless of where
you bought it from? That's what the Gemara is going to ask. Monifsha.
I know we touched on this Gemara also.
Okay, I don't know. Monifsha. Well, we have dinim about tefillin and Masechta Shabbos. I don't think we have this particular thing. So the Gemara asks Monifsha. Either way you look at it, why would you say you're talking about this guy is selling tefillin in large lots? Where did he himself get them from? Imechad gavra kozov. And if he himself bought them from one sofer, lived like oy shola shoyad oy shola shorosh, then fine. Okay, we need to check three in order to have a chazaka. But why do you need to check some shoyads and some shoroshes? Check three shoyads or three shoroshes, and then once you find all three of them are good, then you know they're all good. On the other hand, if this guy that you're buying from himself bought from different people, then you should need to check everyone individually, because just because you checked, so you checked three of them, you checked three tefillin altogether. So what? Those three aren't necessarily written by the same sofer. The batim aren't made by the same batim macher. So how do you know? Just because you checked some of them doesn't mean all of the rest of them are good. The answer is...
You're going to rely on him as opposed to opening it up and looking at the...
Well, that's the point. We're saying you have to open it up and look. But why do you have to look? Davka at two shoroshes and one shoyad, or vice versa?
You're going to rely on him if he tells you who we bought it
from. Well, yeah, okay. You have to rely on him.
Looking at the handwriting and say, well,
yeah, maybe, okay. The answer is lo olam mechad gavra zavin. We are talking about that he bought them all from one person. But we need to make sure that he's a mumcha in the shoyad and the shorosh. After all, they're written differently. You have in the shorosh, it's four different parchments. In the shoyad, it's one long one. The batim are made a bit differently, actually much differently, because one has four compartments and one has one. You need to make sure that the guy knows what he's doing both with shoyad and shorosh. So therefore, you need to check two of one and one of the other.
Shoyad was one big box also.
We're talking about the shayad, one big compartment, exactly. Yeah, okay. So the Gemara asks, Amy, is that so? What do you mean that you need to check two shayads and one shorosh, or two shoroshes and one shayad? V'hatani Rabba Bar Shmuel b'tefillin. Rabba Bar Shmuel taught a din as far as the dinim of tefillin. Boidik sholosh shayad v'shorosh. You have to check three shayads and shorosh. My lab, oi shalosh shoyad, oi shalosh shorosh. L'chora, that means either three shoyads or three shoroshes. So what are you, Rab, telling me that some of one and some of the other? The answer is loy. That's not what he means. He means shalosh altogether. You need to check three. Mehen shoyad, mehen shorosh. Some of them have to be shoyads. Some of them have to be shoroshes, but not three of one, because if you check, let's say, three shoroshes, fine. You find the guy's a mumche in writing shoroshes. You still don't know that he's a mumche in writing shoyads. So if in the future, you want to be able to buy from this guy, from this middleman who is buying from a sofer, from one particular sofer, then you have to know that sofer knows how to do shoyads as well as shoroshes.
The shoyads are much easier.
The shoyads are easier in a way, but still. Yeah. Okay. But the Gemara says, V'hotoni Rav Kahana. Okay, but didn't Rav Kahana teach a braisa, but tefillin bodek shtayim, shoyad v'shorosh? When it comes to tefillin, you only need to check two of them when you're buying from somebody, one shoyad and one shorosh. And Rav is telling us that you need three, two of one and one of the other. The answer is, Homani Rebbe. The answer is, that would be according to Rebbe. Da'ama b'tirei zimni havi chazaka. We have a machloikas in a number of places in Shas between Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel. How many times do you need something to occur for it to be a chazaka? Rebbe says you only need two times, and that's enough for a chazaka. Reb Shimon Gamliel says you need three. So therefore, according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, you need to check three of them. And according to Rebbe, you need only two. So Rav Kahana's Brai says, according to Rebbe. So the question is, E Rebbe Ema Sefer. So if you're going to say that this Braisa is according to Rebbe, then look at the next part of the Braisa, V'chein B'tzvasa Sheni, V'chein B'tzvasa Shlishi. The same thing is true as far as the second batch and as far as the third batch. In each batch, it sounds like, in the first batch, you check two of them. And now you know the rest of that batch is good. That batch being, they all come from one cipher. Then you have a different batch, which this vendor may have bought from a different cipher. You know, like you have nowadays, you go, let's say to, you know, you go to Hamefitz, or you go to Araito or whatever, you know, they buy Twilin from many different cipher. So you have, let's say you buy a whole batch of Twilin from them that are all tied together, let's say in one bundle. So they all came from one particular cipher. Then you have a different batch that came from a different cipher and so forth. So it sounds like we're saying that within each batch, you need to check two of them, and then one shol yad and one shol rosh, and then each batch is known to be good. And then once you check three batches like that, then you know that any other batch you buy from him in the future also comes from an expert cipher. So then why are we saying three? Rebbe shlishi miyislei. If the bride says, according to Rebbe, Rebbe doesn't hold you should need a third batch in the first place. According to him, you should only need two out of each of two batches. Once you check altogether four tefillin, one shol yad and one shol rosh from the first batch, and one shol yad and one shol rosh from the second batch, then according to Rebbe, that's it. You're done. So why are we mentioning three batches? That seems to be. So are we going according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, or are we going according to Rebbe? The answer is Moida Rebbe b'tzvasim, because Rebbe will agree when it comes to batches. Just because you checked one batch doesn't necessarily tell you something about the second one, because the mitrei tzvasa gavri zavin. It's likely that each batch came from a different sofer. So therefore, yes, so Rebbe would agree that it's good enough. Rebbe would say, in other words, it's good enough within each batch itself. You only need to check two, one shol yad and one shol rosh, because then once you do that, you know the rest of that batch comes from the same sofer, and therefore you're good. But each batch may come from a different sofer. So therefore you have to check. More of them. So then ihochi afilu revi nami v'afilu chamishi nami. Then why is it good enough to check three batches and now you know from then on it's good? Based on that logic, you still need to check every batch individually. You need to check two of them because they're going to come from a different cipher. The answer is, you're right. What the Braisa is telling us, what Rav Kahana's Braisa is telling us, when it says that you have to check three batches, it doesn't mean you can stop after three batches. It means to tell us not like Rebbe's usual chazaka. Rebbe's usual rule of chazaka is that two are enough. But here, because each tzvas is likely to be from a different cipher, then yes, you need to check all of them. So yes, as a matter of fact, you would have to check the fourth, you would have to check the fifth. It mentions third. In other words, to say, don't think that here it's like Rebbe's usual rule where two are enough, you need to check three, because there are three of them. And if there are four of them, you need to check four of them. And if there are five, you need to check five of them. You need to check as many batches as there are, but within each one, according to Rebbe, you only need to check two of them. Because the chazaka on one batch doesn't tell us anything about another batch, because they may have come from a different sofer.
Which chazaka would you say three usually?
We'd say chazaka is three. It's a coincidence of Shimon Gamliel. But according to Rebbe, you would need only two. The Gemara mentions it. Rashi refers to a Gemara in Yevamos that discusses this whole point. The Gemara ends up saying there that there are actually sometimes when we follow Rebbe and sometimes when we follow Reb Shimon Gamliel. There are certain halachas where we say that two is enough for a chazaka, and certain halachas where we say that you need three.
We learned it in Parag Echaram, but that's what
we're doing. Yeah, okay. Fine. Now, the Mishnah had said, Motzan Tzvasim or Krichos V'chola, that if you find the tefillin in the field, in Tzvasim or in Krichos, so then we said what you do is you wait until after Shabbos and then bring them all in together, as we'll see in a couple of lines why. So first, we have to figure out, my Tzvasim or my Krichos, what do those terms mean? They both mean large bundles, large batches of tefillin. The difference is tzvasim means zavi zavi. Tzvasim means that they're tied together, every pair individually. In other words, there's a bunch of pairs of, you have a whole pile of tefillin over there, but within that pile, each one, you have the shoyad and the shorosh are together. And then you have another shoyad and shorosh together, and then you have a whole bunch of them wrapped up together, let's say. As opposed to krichas, to kricham turba, krichas just means they're one big pile or one big wrap without the shoyads and the shoroshes being paired up.
Now you don't say that you have to leave it because it could be a simon, because it's the bizoyan.
Right now we're dealing with the matter of bizoyan. The question of whether there's a simon on them, whether you define the owners, that we can deal with after Shabbos. Shabbos. Right now, we're dealing with on Shabbos. What do we do in order to save them? Like Rashi said at the beginning of the Perek, you have, for example, dogs could get to them. Other, we're going to talk about in the Gemara soon, Goyim could get to them or whatever. So therefore, you need to save them. Afterwards, you'll deal with Simonim. Yeah.
So we have a bunch of actually standing and wait.
So it's Machshech Aleinu Mavion. So we said you wait until after Shabbos is over and then you bring them in. So the question is, Va'amai, why should you have to wait till after Shabbos? Lailinu Zug Zug. Bring them in one pair at a time, like we said before. Amr of Yitzchak, Breder of Yehuda, L'didi Mifarshale Minei Da'aba. So Rav Yitzchak, Breder of Yehuda says, my father, Rav Yehuda, explained to me that why do we have to wait until Shabbos is over? It's like this. It depends how many there are. Kol she'ilu machnisan zug zug. If there's enough time that if you go in one pair at a time, the kol is kodim shkia sachama, and you'll finish with all of them before shkia, machnisan zug zug. Then the chachamim allow you to bring them one pair at a time. The Eloi, if there's not going to be enough time to finish them before Shkia, you're anyway going to have to come back after Shabbos to get the remaining ones because you're not going to have time to get them all before Shabbos is over. Therefore, then the Chachamim therefore don't allow you to bend the rules of Shabbos and take them in one pair at a time because anyway you're going to have to come back for some of them after Shabbos. So at this point, they're going to tell you just wait until after Shabbos and carry them all in together. Rather than wearing them on Shabbos, which after all is a little bit, which after all is bending the rules derabanan of Shabbos.
What's with carrying it? Because you don't want to carry it less than 4 hours.
That's we're going to talk about that soon.
Even though he brought in 99, there's less of a bazillion for that, and he left one. So, I mean,
but still, he has to come back for that one. So therefore, at this point, he might as well carry them all in together. Rather than at this point, he might as well carry them all in.
Chance because so game coming between.
And you're standing there. And it's on the ground, or it's originally where he found it on the
ground. But actually, he found that on the ground, but it's less of a bizayin than to be Mavaza Shabbos is also a bizayin. So we'll get to, back to that point in a minute. Yeah. Okay. So then we said over sakana machasan v'holich. We said if there's a danger, then you just cover him up and you leave. So the question is, if it's dangerous, then you carry them less than 4 amas at a time. Rav says, or on the side over here, it says Rabba, because on Omud Beis, at the top of Omud Beis, we're going to have Abaya talking to him. Abaya was born long after Rav passed away. So Abaya can't be talking to Rav. But if it's Rabba, then it works, because Abaya was Rabba's nephew and his Talmud. Another possibility is actually the Abaya on the base. There's an Abaya mentioned in some places in the Gemara named Abaya Kshisha, Abaya the Elder. He was one of the earlier Amiroyim. He was in the times of Rav, so maybe it means him. Okay, whatever it is, anyway. So Rav or Rabba says, like Kasha.
Abaya didn't live past 40, did he?
What?
Abaya didn't live past 40 or something?
Abaya lived to 60, actually, the Gemara says. Rava or Rabba lived to 40, yeah. Okay, anyway, so Omer Rav, like Kasha, Habasakonas goyim, habasakonas listed. It depends whether the danger we're talking about is goyim or thieves. Now, Rashi has two explanations on this. Rashi's first explanation is that goyim we're talking about. The problem is there are goyim might do a bazillion to the tefillin. They might treat them disrespectfully or whatever. As opposed to then what you do is you carry them pachas midalad amas, because then if you leave them over there, then the goyim are going to take them and do who knows what with them. As opposed to where there's listim, where there's robbers involved, but the robbers are Jews. So then they may kill the guy for his money, but they're not going to be mevaza tefillin. They for to have respect for tefillin. So then you just cover them up. We're not worried that the list. So then you can't stay over there. So that's the difference. In other words, if the sakona is goyim might be mevaza the tefillin, there's no actual danger from the goyim themselves that they might harm you. Then fine, you wait there until after Shabbos and then you carry them home. As opposed to if the sakona is from Jewish robbers, then you can't stay there because they might mug you. Okay, you're not carrying money on Shabbos, but still they might take whatever you have or kill you or whatever. But the tefillin they are going to be safe and the tefillin they're going to leave alone. So therefore, just cover them and go away. And that way you're safe and the tefillin will be safe. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is that which he prefers is that goyim over here means, sakonas goyim, means that when the goyim made a gzera that you're not allowed to wear tefillin. As we learned about in Masechta Shabbos, where at one point, for example, they made a gzera that anybody who wears tefillin were going to knock out their brains. So then what is, so because of that kind of sakana, so you can't very, so then, in other words, so we can't say in that case, so then the chachamim tell, so then don't wear them in one pair at a time, because then the goyim might catch you. Certainly don't wait until after Shabbos and carry them all in, because you're going to be caught with that kind of contraband. You're going to be in great danger from the goyim. In that case, just cover them and leave. You have no choice. As opposed to when the danger is just, when the danger is just listim, we're talking about goyisha listim, fine. But so if you can't stay there because you're afraid of goyisha listim, then you carry them pachas midal ramas. Okay. So Omalei Abaya, so Abaya says to Rabbah or whoever, B'mai ukim tel masnissin. So what are you explaining in the Mishnah? The sakonas goyim, you're saying it's talking about danger from goyim. Now, according to Rashi's first explanation, it comes out that what we're saying, the distinction between goyim and listim applies only to the particular din that we mentioned at the end. If you can't bring them all in before Shabbos is over, then what do? You wait there till after Shabbos, or do you just cover them and leave? As opposed to, according to Rashi's second explanation, what we're saying is this distinction between sakonas goyim and sakonas listim, when do we say you take them in one at a time versus wait there till after Shabbos, as the case may be, versus, as the Braisa says, you carry them pochus midal ramas, is when there's the danger of goyim because they're xeris versus robbers. That if the danger is because of the goyim and the xeris, then you can't take them in one at a time or all together after Shabbos, because if you get caught with tefillin, you're going to be in great danger. As opposed to when the danger is only listim, so then in the case, so if the danger is listim, then if you ideally you still bring them in one at a time. But if you can't do that because you're afraid that the listim are going to get you, then you and you can't wait there till after Shabbos, then you just cover them up and leave.
No, that's the last thing we just said. You should carry less than four.
You're right. What we're saying is then, if the danger is listim and you can't stay there till after Shabbos, don't leave it over there, because after all, it is goyish listim and they're gonna do bizarreness to the tefillin. You're right. Then we carry it pochus medal ramas. Right. That's yeah. Okay, so the question is, Abaya asks, Ema Sefer, look at the next part of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah had said, Reb Shimon Omer Noistan Lachavere, Vachavere Lachavere. Reb Shimon says, you give him to your friend, and your friend gives him to his, and the friend gives him to his friend, etc. And each person is transferring it less than Dal Ramas. If you're going to say that there's danger from the goyim, Kosher came to Abshim Milsa, there's even more piercing to it. According to Rashi's first explanation, the question is, if we're saying that Jewish listim, again, according to Rashi's first explanation, the listim we're talking about over here, about Jewish ones, who are not going to be mevazeh the tefillin. So then why is Reb Shimon allowing you to give it to somebody else, and somebody else gives it to somebody else? Isn't that making more of a bezoyin for Shabbos? Yes, there's no reason, you don't have to worry about saving the tefillin, because the Jewish listim are not going to harm them. So therefore, why is Reb Shimon allowing you to make up like a public chilul Shabbos, sort of? It's not really chilul Shabbos, but fine, like a public thing that where it looks like you're being careless with the dinim of Shabbos and carry them pachas pachas b'dal ramas. According to Rashi's second explanation, the question is, if you're telling me that the Mishnah is talking about where there's danger from goyim, as opposed to the Braisa is talking about where the danger is because of goyim, because of the xeris, as opposed to the Braisa is talking about a sakana from listim, from robbers, then why is Reb Shimon telling you, have somebody give it to somebody else, etc.? If there's talking about a time when there's a xera against tefillin, you don't want more people to be involved. The more people involved, the more likely, the more people you're putting in danger. The answer is chasuri mechsura. You're right. Mishnah is actually missing a phrase. V'hachi katoni. What it means to say is like this: b'med dvarim amurim. When is this talking about that you wait, that you carry them in one pair at a time, you wear them in one pair at a time, or you cover them and leave them? Is b'sakonas goyim. Is when the sakana is from the where you leave them, where you cover them and leave them, is where the sakana is from goyim because of the xeris. But if the danger is from robbers, then you can carry them less than four amas at a time. And Reb Shimon says, in that case, instead of you personally carrying it less than four amas at a time, you give it to somebody else who gives it to somebody else, etc. So that answers our question, because when it's Sakonis Listim, there's no problem of Absha Milsa. There's no problem that you're putting more people in danger, because as it is, the danger is not the danger is not that the danger is only that if you leave the tefillin there, the Listim, the Goyish Listim are going to do whatever to them. But like this, there's no problem. It's okay if people get caught with tefillin on them. There's no gzera at the time of people being caught with tefillin. Therefore, so the Tanakhama is saying that it's for the reasons that we're going to explain in a second, it's better if you carry it less than 4 amas at a time, as opposed to Rav Shimon says it's better if you have a bunch of people involved, each one of them transferring it to the other one.
But if you have so many people, each one puts a person takes
a person. No, they're not actually wearing it. You're passing it.
Once you're doing that, yeah, so many people, each one just put a bit of film and carry it and walk off.
If they can do that, but
usually, if you walk in the woods, you find film, you don't have a bunch of people with you.
Right. No. So the question is, with my kumbifigi, in that case, if we understand it that way, then what is what's the underlying argument between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon? So like this, Mar Sava Pochas Me'aba Amas Odif, the Tanakhama holds it's better that you carry it less than 4 amas at a time. Because if you're going to give it to one person, who's going to give it to another person, etc. Avsha Milsa to Shabbos, you're making a very public thing that you're carrying something on Shabbos, and people are going to come to think less of Shabbos. They're going to think it's not so important to not carry on Shabbos, because we see we just had 100 people involved over here, one person giving it to the other one. So therefore, the Tanakhama says better that you should carry it less than 4 amas at a time, and that way it stays private. That way, the whole world doesn't know that we're transferring things on Shabbos. Umar Sovar, whereas Rav Shimon holds, Noisim Achavere Odif, it's still better to give it to somebody else. The Amit Melichin Pochas Me'aba Amis, because if you're going to say you yourself should carry it less than 4 amas at a time, Zimnin Delava Daite, you might get careless, you might not realize at some point how far you walked, but also last year now, Abamis Rishosan Adam, you're going to wind up carrying it 4 amas and Rishosan Adam and actually be over on an Isu Daraisa. So therefore, better to be giving it to another person who's going to give it to another person, etc., where there's no possibility that they're going to end up being Mechal Shabbos. Okay, it's Avsha Milsa. It makes it that now a lot more people know what's going on. Fine, but that's still better than the chances that somebody might be that the person himself might be over on an Issa Daraisa.
Just thinking according to what you just said now, if the person, you're worried about him walking more than 4 amas, so he puts it on and he walks home with it. It's also
fine if he's able to put it on. But let's say there's a lot of them, or let's say he's not going to have time to finish. Yeah, if he's not going to have the time to finish them all off before Shabbos. Yeah. Tosfos points out that Rav Shimon would probably agree if you don't have any other people with you, then sure, you yourself can carry it less than Dalet Amos. After all, we learned at the end of Masechta Shabbos, you have a case where a person has his money bag with him at the beginning of Shabbos, and we say the Chachamim know that a person is not just going to leave his money over there. So we tell him, ideally, put it on your donkey or give it to a goy or whatever, but if you don't have any of those options, then you carry it. So Tosfos says the same thing would be over here. Rav Shimon is just saying, if you have a choice between you yourself carrying it pochus pochus midal amas versus giving it to somebody else, or give it to somebody else, etc., better to do it that way.
If we're giving one to another, you're saying it's a milta. Then, in terms of design Shabbos, isn't the opposite? People will say they're careful not to just one person carrying the whole thing.
That's fine, but it makes people. There's still a certain zilzal of Shabbos that we're making, that we're being makel so much on Shabbos that we're allowing one person to give something to somebody else and transfer it. Way all the way across Rosh Hashanah Abim, it's still there's a certain bizarre of Shabbos involved. Rashi says it could zilzal Shabbos tefei. There's more of a yeah.
I would say that if they see this tefillin, obviously it's if someone finds a metziah, oh yeah, so they're making the Shabbos cheap. But if it's tefillin, obviously we know tefillin you can't. You know,
okay, nevertheless
going on?
Though.
What's going on? Oh, it's tefillin.
Yeah, tefillin. Okay, but nevertheless, Rav Shimon is still nevertheless the Chachamim rather the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is still concerned that people are going to start getting careless with Shabbos. Then we have to remember, after all, we learned at the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, Hotzah is a Malacha Grua. Hotzah is one of those things you wouldn't even know it was a Malacha if it weren't for the Torah telling you that it is. And unlike most other Malachas where we say that, whatever was done in the Mishkan, and then we ourselves derive what are the various told us of it when it comes to Hotzah, it's not like that. It's only the ones that the Chachamim told us are Hotzah and nothing else. The people, it's one of those Malachas, it's a Malacha that it's not so obvious even that it's a Malacha and people are likely to get more careless with it. So we need to, We said in the Mishnah of Achein Benoi, we said the same thing with his son. So the question is, Benoi my boy, awesome. What's his son doing out in the field? We're not just talking about that they took a walk and they're not just talking that they took a walk and now the kid is having a tantrum and doesn't want to go home. So the answer is Dvei Menashe Tana. They taught in the yeshiva Menashe v'shiyodatu ima ibasada. The case is that his wife, that his mother gave birth to him in the field. So then we're saying, so then in the Mishnah we said that Rav Shimon had said you give the baby to somebody else. Even if there's 100 of them. So umay afilu hein meya. So what do we mean by adding even if there's 100 of them? Meaning the afagav de kashula yoda. Reb Shimon is continuing. He's saying even though the baby has a harder time of it when you give him from one hand to another, a baby prefers to stay with the one who's holding them now. They don't like being passed from one person to another, so it's harder on the baby. Afilu hachi ha'adifa. Nevertheless, Reb Shimon says that's still better rather than you yourself carrying it. Pachas pachas midal ramas. It's still better than you yourself carrying it. Pachas pachas midal ramas, because what happens if you accidentally at one point carry it full 4 ounces? Now, obviously, we're not talking about where the baby's life is in danger in the field over there, no question. We're talking about just that's uncomfortable over there. Let's say, you know, it's this time of year, let's say it's a little bit cool in the field compared to in the house, and therefore it's better if we can get the baby someplace a little bit warm.
Maybe he's born.
Right. So, okay. So maybe like the weather we have now, maybe it would be a sakana. But like, let's say, you know, you're talking about it's 70 degrees outside, let's say. So, you know, the baby's not in danger of freezing, but it still would be more comfortable. And yeah. Okay. Yeah.
What about the mother? She just gave birth. How should you?
So the mother, okay. Once she gave birth, she herself, then we can be Machal Shabbos for her. But the baby, we can also be Machal Shabbos for what's necessary for the baby. But the question is, how necessary is this versus what can we do for the baby in the field? So Reb Shimon is saying, okay, you could, in principle, do things for it in the field, but nevertheless, you can give it to another person or give it to another person, etc., and bring it into the house.
It's interesting that they bring this situation where a baby was born. Baby's born. We all know a baby's born and it's dangerous the first wherever you are.
Again, but the point is, so we're not talking about over here where there's pikuach nefesh involved, we're just talking about something where maybe the baby would be more comfortable in the house or something. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah of Yehuda, I'm a noisin chavis v'chola, noisin adam chavis v'chola. Rabbi Yehuda had said by the same token, one person can give a barrel to somebody else who gives it to somebody else, etc., and they can carry it even outside the tchum. So the question is, what's going on? The less later of Yehuda Ha Ditnan, doesn't Rabbi Yehuda agree with what we learn in a Mishnah in Beitza? Habehema v'akelim kiragli abaylim, an animal or kalim go according to the feet of the owner, meaning let's say, for example, on Yom Tov, if you borrow an animal or you borrow kalim from somebody on Yom Tov, you can only carry them within the area, within the Tchum Shabbos of the person you borrowed it from. So let's say, for example, you live in this city. The other guy lives in this city. You walked over because less than a Tchum Shabbos apart, but you can only carry it as far as this person would be able to go. He's only able to go till here, let's say. So that's it. You can carry it. You can't carry it further in that direction, even though that's within your own tchum. So why is Rabbi Yehuda saying over here that one person can give it to another, etc., and it can go outside the tchum? It should have to be limited to the tchum of the original owner. Amr Shlokish Mishum Rav Levi Sava. So the answer is Sir Shlokish answers in the name of Levi Sava, Hachab Mayaskinen, Bima'aran Mechobis Lachobis. The case that Yehuda is talking about is you're not carrying the barrel as is. You're pouring the water, you're pouring the water in the barrel from one barrel into another. So in other words, you have the first person starts out with a barrel of water, he pours the water into a barrel that's being held by the next guy. The next guy pours the water into the next barrel, etc. And then the water is able to travel even outside the tchum. But Rabbi Yehuda l'taymei. So Rabbi Yehuda would be going according to his own svara. Da'ama mayim ein behen mamish. Rabbi Yehuda says that water is not considered to have a mamoshus. It's not considered to be something that has substance where there would be an issue of tchumen on it. Ditnan, namely, we learn also in Beitza over there, where it talks about these dinim of things being limited to a tchum. The Mishnah says, so you have a case over there, of a woman who borrowed from another woman spices for a dish that she's making, or let's say that what's relevant over here is she borrowed water or salt to make dough. So she herself has flour, but she didn't have water and she didn't have salt, so she borrowed it from a neighbor. So then we're saying that the resulting dough is actually, it's limited to the common tchum of the both of them, which means, let's say, for example, so we're talking their neighbors. They both live in the same city. But let's say, for example, Sarah supplied the flour. Rachel, let's say, supplied, Rachel supplied the water and the salt. Now, let's say before Yom Tov, Sarah had made an Eruv Tchumen in this direction. Rachel had made an Eruv Tchumen in this direction. So if the Tchumen don't overlap, then you can't do anything with this dough. If the Tchumen overlap, then you can only carry it within the overlapping area. So let's say one of them has an Eruv Tchumen, 1,000 amos east of the city, and the other one, 1,000 amos west of the city. So fine, they both have 2,000 amos in the middle where they can carry, but not outside of that. So we see, and that's according to the Tanakh Kama. And the Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yehuda poter b'mayim. Rabbi Yehuda paters when it comes to the water, because the water is not considered to have mamoshus. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda says, the fact that Rachel supplied the water doesn't matter when the dough can be taken anywhere where Sarah can go.
What are you doing with this dough, Shabbos?
Well, we're not talking dough, we're not talking Shabbos, we're talking Yom Tov.
Oh.
Masechta Beitzah talks about the dinim of Yom Tov. So to the extent that these dinim apply to Shabbos, then yeah, I mean, you can borrow something from your neighbor on Shabbos, but I mean, generally you don't have the issues of carrying it outside the tchum because you can't carry it outside, you can't carry it in Rosh Hashanah anyway. So the dinim are more relevant to Yom Tov. But here in our Mishnah, we're talking about Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that one person can give to another, who can give to another, etc. So now we're talking about that you're pouring the water from one barrel into another. And the same way as Rabbi Yehuda says over there, when it comes to Yom Tov, that the water is not considered to have mamoshes. And therefore, the fact that Rachel supplied the water, we don't care about her tum. We focus only on Sarah's tum, the one who supplied the flour. The same way over here, we would say the water is not considered to have mamoshes, and we don't care what tum it started in the first place. So umay loy tahalach zu. So then when the Chachamim, so when the Chachamim answer him that it shouldn't be able to go more, shouldn't be able to go outside of the owner's tchum, what does that mean? Rabbi Yehuda is agreeing that the barrel is not going outside the tchum. And what it means is the Chachamim are saying, lo yahalach, mashabazu yosim eragri abaylim. They're saying, fine, but the point is, we started out with a barrel full of water. The barrel itself is limited to the owner's tchum. Therefore, the water that was inside that barrel should also be limited to that tchum. They're arguing with Rabbi Yehuda and saying, you're telling me that water has no mamoshes. We can't agree with that. The barrel itself is limited. Therefore, the water should also be. The problem with that understanding is, but you know what? Rabbi Yehuda's din in Masechta Beitzah is talking about you can't see the water be'ein, it's embedded into the dough. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda can say that the flour is the main thing of the dough. The water is not really the main thing. But when you have water all by itself, which is what we're talking about over here, where do you ever see that Rabbi Yehuda holds it shouldn't have a tchum? In fact, we see even when it comes to a pot of food, Rabbi Yehuda holds that water is not bottle in it. You want to tell me that water all by itself should be bottle? The Tanya, we learn in a braisa, also in connection with those dinim about food and things, about the tchum of behema and kalim and so forth on Yom Tov, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Maim or melach betalin beisa, water and salt can be bottled in the dough, the ein betalin bekdera. But if you have the same kind of thing where Sarah is making a pot of food and she borrows from her neighbor water or salt to put in the food, then the water is not bottled. Mipnei roitva, because a pot of food has liquid in it. It has noticeable liquid or gravy or soup or whatever in it. So unlike in dough where the water is bottled and you don't see any water in the dough afterwards, it's holding the dough together, of course, but you don't actually see it. But in a kedera, you do see it. So even when it's in a kedera, Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's not bottled. Certainly when it's by itself, it shouldn't be bottled. In fact, Mefoshim point out, Levi Sava, who first pointed out this thing that we're talking about, pouring water from one barrel to another, he had to know of this braisa also, but he figured that the difference is in a kedera you would say the water is more important because the food needs water in it. You make a pot of cholent, for example, you want to have that there should be water in it, and after all the water now has the flavor of the cholent and whatever, so it's different. Maybe he would say that water by itself is weaker, and the answer is that no, we're saying that that water by itself, Rabbi Yehuda would also hold has mamoshes. The only time he would say it's bottle is where you don't even see it be'ein, namely in the dough. So we can't say that we're talking about, Rabbi Yehuda says that we're talking about pouring the water from one barrel into another and taking it outside the tchum that way. Ella Omar Rava. So Rava gives a different answer. Hocha b'chavis shekonsa shvisa. We're talking about the barrel was kona shvisa. The barrel had a place. The barrel belonged to somebody before Yom Tov or before Shabbos, so therefore it has its tchum. Umayim shaloi konu shvisa askinan. We're talking about though the water was not kevei was not kona shvisa. We learned earlier in the Masechta that when you have, for example, a river or a river or a mayon or whatever that you draw water from, the water is not considered to be kona shvisa until somebody actually draws it. So it wasn't kona shvisa at the beginning of Shabbos. Debot lachavis legabi mayim. And what happens is you are talking about giving the chavis itself with the water to somebody else. Not like Levi Sava said that we're talking about pouring the water from one barrel to another. We're carrying the barrel from one person is handing the barrel to the next one, but the barrel is bottled to the water. Kiditnan, like we learn, the water itself was not kona shvisa.
It's bottled to the barrel.
It was no, that's not that the water was bottled to the barrel. The water itself was not kona shvisa, and Tosfos explains that we're talking about over here that nobody who's handling this water intends to be kona, so therefore the water is still considered hefker. Like when the water was in the nahar, in the river in the first place, it's not kona shvisa until somebody actually draws it. So therefore, yes, somebody drew it and put it in the barrel, but they weren't intending to be kona. So therefore, it doesn't have a tchum. So the water doesn't have a tchum. It can go as far as you want it to go, says Rabbi Yehuda. And the barrel is bottled to the water because the barrel is only there in order to hold the water. One second. Kiditnan, as we learned in a Mishnah in Shabbos, hamotzia chai b'mita, if a person carries out a live person in a bed on Shabbos, now carrying a live person is not an issur d'oraisa because chai noseh esatzmo, a living person helps carry their own weight. So you can't say that you're doing the malacha by yourself. And therefore, so if you carry out a live person in a bed, potter afal mita, then you potter also for carrying the bed, because the bed is tofel, secondary to the person. And the Mishnah continues similarly. Hamotzi oichlen pachas mikashir b'kli. If a person carries out food less than the shir, we learned in Masechta Shabbos that the shir to be chayav for carrying food on Shabbos is a kigrigeres, the size of a dried fig. So if you carry out less than that in a keli, potter afal kli, then again you're also potter for the keli. Keli tofel, because the kli is tofel to the food, and since you potter for the food, then you potter for the keli. So the same thing over here. Since the water doesn't have a makom shvisa, then therefore the barrel is tofel to it, and it doesn't need it. Masiv Rabbi Yosef,
even though we said that you're kosher shvisa with the barrel.
Now, the barrel was kona shvisa before Shabbos, but now that you have water in it, which was not kona shvisa, then the barrel, Rava is arguing, now the barrel is bottled to the water, and therefore you can carry the water as far as you want, and with it you can carry the barrel, which is now tuffle to the water.
Even though water you need for living, you need every water for everything, considered essential.
Yeah, but it's still not, if it wasn't kona shvisa, it wasn't kona shvisa, yeah. Master Rabbi Yosef, but Rabbi Yosef says, I have a contradiction to that though. A Braisa says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'Sheyora. Rabbi Yehuda says, when it comes to a Sheyora, a caravan of people that are camping out for Shabbos, where then they don't have very much water, then you can pass a barrel from one person to another, implying b'Sheyora ain shalei b'Sheyora loy. We're only allowing this heter where there's a Sheyora, it sounds like, where you're short on water, so therefore the Chachamim are allowing you to give a barrel of water from one to the other. If you're talking about the scenario where, like Rava is saying, where the water was not kona shvisa, then it doesn't have to be dafka by a Sheyora. Anytime you would be allowed to do that, because the water is allowed to go wherever you want. So Rabbi Yosef says, yeah, actually our Mishnah is talking about a Shiyara. So there's a bit of a case of an oiness. So therefore Rabbi Yehuda is allowing you to do it. But he wouldn't allow you to do it otherwise. In other words, fine. It's a matter of tchumin. Tchumin adrabbanon. So fine. So tchumin will allow you to relax that rule of tchumin, which is drabbanon, when we're talking about a Shiyara where they're badly in need of water. But not Stam. If you're talking about in a city or whatever, where it's easy to get water, then Rabbi Yehuda would not allow that. Abaya says no. If that was the case, Bishayara, if we were talking about in a caravan where they're short on water, Afilu Chobis Shekonsa Shvisa or Mayim Shekonsa Shvisa, then we would allow it even if the barrel on the water were Kona Shvisa. because again, we would relax the rules for them. Again, we're not talking about pikuach nefesh. We're not talking about whether if they don't drink by the end of Shabbos, they're going to die of thirst. Then of course, pikuach nefesh, derech kolat torah kolah. Again, like we said before about the case, about the baby born in the field, we're talking about there's just going to be a little bit of discomfort, but still, Rabbi says in that case, the chachamim would still allow it more generally to go outside the tchum. Even if the water was kona shvisa, even if the water actually, even if somebody was kona the water before Shabbos. So when are we talking about, like Rava had said, where we're talking about it's not a shayara and the chavis belonged to somebody, it was kona shvisa, the water was not kona shvisa at the beginning of Shabbos because nobody owned it, and even now, like Tosva says, nobody was kona it yet. So like Rava had said, in other words, so not
you put it into the chavis, you're kona, it's your chavis.
Yeah, because you can still have in mind, I'm putting it in my chavis, but I'm not intending to be kona it. Rav Ashi Yomer, Rav Ashi gives a different answer. Hocha b'chabis de hefker askinen, umayim de hefker askinen. Here we're talking about the barrel and the water are both hefker. So they weren't kona shvisa, either one. Uman omru. So that's another answer is that we're talking about everything over here is hefker, the barrel and the water. And as Tosfos says, nobody had any intention to be koina any of it. So now it can go as far as you want. Obviously you still have to have, you can only pass it to one person who can pass it to the next person because you still can't carry it. But here we're dealing with the question of the tchum. Uman omruloi. So then when we say in the Mishnah that omruloi, the Chachamim said to him that it shouldn't be able to go further than Ragle Habaylim. What Ragle Habaylim? If we're talking about over here, according to Rav Ashi, that everything over here, the barrel and the water are hefker, then there's no Baylim. The answer is Rabbi Yechon Manuri. That would be according to Rabbi Yechon Manuri, to Omar, that he says, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, Cheftze Hefker Koinen Shvisa. He says that Hefker items are Koinen Shvisa where they are. We had a discussion over there about a person who fell asleep outside the city. Is he Koine himself a Tchum Shabbos or not? Rabbi Yechon Manuri had said that not, because he's like an object of Hefker. And we had a more general discussion over there on that question. Or Cheftze Hefker, do we say that wherever they were at the beginning of Shabbos is where they're Koine Shvisa, and therefore and that becomes their Tchum for the rest of that Shabbos, or the rest of that Yavdiv, or not? Does it only go according to the first person who was Zoyche in them? Rabbi Yechon Manuri holds Cheftze Hefker Koine Shvisa. So according to him, wherever this water and wherever this barrel was at the beginning of Shabbos is where Tchum is measured from. So what does he mean when he uses the expression, this shouldn't be able to go further than the Ragle HaBailim? What Bailim? It's Hefter. It means, we can't allow this water and this Chavis to go further than a Keli that does have an owner. In other words, if it had an owner limited to a certain Tchum Shabbos, the Tchum Shabbos of the owner, the same thing. Now it needs to be limited to its own Tchum Shabbos, the Tchum that it itself was koine at the beginning of Shabbos. And therefore, he says, I can't agree with you, Rabbi Yehuda, that you should be allowed to carry it pochus pochus midal ramas. The Rambam and Shulchan Aruch paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that, and in fact, like Rava's explanation of it, we're not just talking in a Sheyara, we're talking more generally. Yes, you have a Chavis like that, you can't pass it to another person who passes it to another person, pochus pochus midal amas, and carry it as far as you want, even outside the tchum, because we're talking about that it was hefker. So it was in Rambam Perek Echad last week, in Perek Yudbeis, the Rambam mentioned that point.
But if it wouldn't be hefker, then it would be like...
Well, if it wouldn't be hefker, then it's limited to the tchum of the original owner. But since it's hefker, then there's no limit on it, because the halacha is not chefze hefker, or not koinin shvisa, and therefore, yeah, you can take it as far as you want. So each person is transferring it less than four amas, so you don't have a problem with that, but you're able to take it outside the tchum.
Have in mind not to own it.
Everybody, as Tosva says, would have to have in mind not to be koinin it, because if they're koinin it, then yeah, then it has their tchum, yeah.
So it needs water, make sure you find the water that does more than money.
Okay. Shkayach, everyone.
Question.
Yeah.
When you transfer the barrel to someone else, you do amshacha and you're koni.
You can, picking up something is not necessarily koni, only if you have in mind to do a kenyan. Think of it. I mean, you look at something in the store, you pick up something to see if you want to buy it. Are you koni at that point? No, only if you had in mind to. You can pick up something and not intend to be koni. So that would be how it would have to be over here.
And but Tosfos if you intend to be Koine, then you cannot transfer it.
What do you mean? If you intend to be Koine, then at that point, then Tchum Shabbos kicks in, and then you can't transfer it outside your Tchum. Yeah. Okay. That's Tosfos mentioned that point. Yochel Lotziem, Chutz V'Tchum, Shezocha Behen Tchila, So let's say Tosfos says you could have, why are we passing it from one person to another anyway? Tosfos learns you could have, let's say you're passing it to the next person so they can take a drink, and then they're passing it to the next person so they can take a drink. Like Rabbi Yosef had said, we're talking about a shayara, that we're talking about a caravan where they're all thirsty because they're short of water. But even we said, Abaya had said, and Rava had said, that we don't necessarily need to be talking about a caravan, but still, why would you be passing the chavis from one person to another to pastor so they can drink? So each person is only intending to be koina what they're drinking. And fine, then they're passing the rest of it on to the next person who's then gonna take a drink. So therefore, nobody is coining it, and therefore they can carry it as far as they want, says Rabbi Yehuda.
Mm-hmm. That's halacha.
The halacha is passing like Rabbi Yehuda, yeah.
Okay.